Technorama episode 611, The Day the Podcast Stood Still. Welcome to Technorama, the podcast that takes a look at tech, science, sci-fi. Why does it sound like I'm struggling with this thing that I've been saying?
First time you've done the show? I think you've said the same thing for 15 years.
I think it's because I keep sticking. It's like trying to juggle when you've already got enough balls in the air and somebody throws another one at you. We launched a new podcast at work, so I've got like five things that
it's like, hey, I'm getting the hang of this. Whoa. You know,
I've got five different intros. It almost slips out as welcome to TechNow, the web series for ServiceNow administrators, developers, and builders of all skill levels. Or it could come out as good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and whenever you are. Welcome to community live stream. There's so many intros that are queued up in my head. I got to get the right one for the right show. This is Technorama. We take a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. I'm Chuck Tomasi, sitting here in sunny Phoenix, Arizona, but it's actually overcast and it may rain. I mean, it may unleash on us soon. There's a dust storm predicted tonight, so we're going to batten down the hatches. Just across the country from me is Craig Stepp, as always. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. Actually, this morning was a kind of a surprise.
Oh?
I opened the garage door. And I walked through the door and I was like, I know it's going to happen. It's going to be humid because it rained really hard last night and hot. And I walked down. I was like, whoa, it was like pleasant, cool, very comfortable. So it's like a hint of fall teasing me in the air. I could feel it.
I had a dream about snow last night. Does that count for anything?
You're going to have a snowstorm in August in Phoenix.
Like that'll, then you know the apocalypse is on the way. You know, for 2020, that would probably be right on track.
Yeah. Which month do I have that card down on my cards?
Someone September. Said whenever hell freezes over. Well, here it comes.
Yeah. I know. What was that? Somebody posted about a movie with running zombies. I said, oh, I had that for September, October.
It's World War Z. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have running zombies for October.
What do you have? The 2020 calendar?
Yeah, that's right. There's a bingo card. Ball. You know, which one you got?
All right. We have some feedback. We asked you a question on social media. We got some questions and answers for you.
By the way, did I mention the mailman was a zombie?
All right, we asked you, what movie has made you laugh the hardest? And Craig, would you like to take the Technorama answers?
Sure, because I was incompetent and didn't share it.
You were busy this weekend. I'm letting you get a pass on that one.
All right. So Fritz Ulrich Seward. He says The Trouble with Harry from Alfred Hitchcock. Says, to be honest, I've laughed not very much in the movie, but when I left the theater, I had sore muscles on my face and from the nonstop grinning.
Okay. It says a Hitchcock. You're assuming it's Alfred Hitchcock. It could be Arnold Hitchcock, right? His long lost cousin who writes comedy films, not Hitchcock that makes the horror movies.
I know. Trouble with it. I don't think I've seen that one. So was it funny? Was it humorous?
I didn't see it, but I think it's funny that we both came up with Arnold at the same time.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
That was frightening in itself.
I know, right?
What else do we have?
John Miller Jr. said it was a tie between Spaceballs and Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Okay.
That was good. Those are two good ones right there. I must be a huge Mel Brooks fan, of course. And I think we all are, because I was just talking about Blazing Saddles earlier today.
Which is our next comment.
Yeah. So Steve London says Blazing Saddles from 1974. Oops, says Seymour. I saw it as I was a kid, and I lived and saw it like 100 times. Me too, or perhaps Spaceballs.
Again,
it's funny
Mel
because
Brooks.
We were just talking about this.
Well, yeah, we're in the Mel Brooks. I will admit, Mel Brooks had a a significant impact on my psyche.
Oh, he is up there for me. He is up there with Douglas Adams and, of course, stuff like Star Wars and stuff like that. But as far as humor goes, yes, he's way up there.
Oh, Dr. Yeah, Demento.
Excuse me?
Dr. Demento.
Yes. Well, for me later in life, because I didn't have Dr. Demento in my radio network area. So
Monty Python.
Monty Python's a good one. Yep. That's definitely up there.
Okay, read on, Munfrey.
Anyway, so Edward Chase. Perhaps Deadpool as far as more recent movies.
Mm, yeah.
I would agree with that. I've been digging Deadpool big time. Weber Baker says, support your local sheriff.
I don't know. You should see who's running in the election this year. Oh, sorry.
Well, that's kind of localized there. And of course, Christina Norris says, Anchorman.
Very good. What do I have on my page? JT Shea says, Dodgeball. Hadn't seen that one. Gary Lindros says,
it had some funny, I wouldn't say it's a great movie, but it had some funny moments. Oh my gosh, yes. It had some funny moments.
Isn't that a Will Ferrell movie?
Yes.
That's probably why I haven't seen it.
You should watch that one. You might enjoy that one.
Okay. Gary Lindros says, The Jerk. I saw it when I was about 11. I fell off the couch at least three times.
Oh, you know what? Don't tell my parents, but that was one of the ones I wasn't supposed to be watching, like on HBO. You know, I stayed up late and watched it. I knew the code on the cable box.
The illegal descrambler, Craig. And he's watching.
I didn't hack it.
Watching girly movies later at night.
No, it was more like social engineering. I knew the code by watching my dad type in the code. So,
Paul Parkinson says, Life of Brian on the initial theater release. Also, the B movie that came with it, a travelogue. The travelogue was played dead straight, except the voiceover was Cleese J. All was well until they went back to Venice. And we return once again to Venice. Gondolas. Okay. Now I'm going to have to look for that. I'm going to have to go look for the travelogue. Tiffany says, Eddie Murphy Raw. I was 15. Eddie Murphy Raw was pretty darn funny. Mm-hmm. Someone done stole your battery. Sorry, Gary wrote it. I had to read it like that.
You know what? Yeah. Eddie Murphy Raw was, again, it was one I probably saw on like HBO or something like that.
I couldn't believe it.
He had
Raw and what was the other one? Oh, no, I can't remember. But he...
From Eddie Murphy?
All right, we'll move it along. But the... I can't remember if it was... Which one was... Gus, your wife's a Bigfoot. Gunaguhu. That's what she said. And then... what was this? Aunt falling down the stairs. Takes like 20 minutes. Oh, and she's spouting out prayers as she goes, Oh, Lord Jesus. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, help me, Jesus. Boom, 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 boom. Help me, Lord. I'm almost halfway down. Boom, 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 boom. Danthal Farrenben says, recently, it was a fan-made parody called Harry Potter and the Deathly Weapons. Oh, that sounds intriguing. They replaced all the wands with guns. With After Effects and added gun-related visual jokes. I nearly passed out laughing several times. I read about that,
but I hadn't seen it.
That sounds good. Clinton Albert says, Airplane.
Oh. Hey, you know what? That's another one.
The Zucker Brothers.
Yeah, the Zucker Brothers. I'm in there with Clinton on that one, of course.
And don't call me Shirley. Paul says, probably Python's Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
Your arm's off. It's just a flesh wound. Yeah, Bill Olympus says, Blazing.
That's probably one of my favorite movies. Just because of everything was off the hook on it.
But it's one you have to warm up to, because if somebody sets the high expectations, you know, you'll walk in and you go, I don't get it. All right. We got another Blazing Saddles, A Fish Called Wanda from Jack Mangan.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a couple of replies. Jack,
replied to himself.
Don't call me stupid. Van Wilder from Tiffany. Diane.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here is the. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead and say that.
You want the one? Go ahead and say it. What did Diane say?
So Diane says Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And I'm here to tell you, when I was in the theater, especially when they were going on the wrong way on the highway, and when they go between the trucks and they look at each other and you see the devil and you see the skeleton, I was in stitches. My stomach and my cheeks hurt when I left that theater. I love that stupid movie.
Did you wet your pants?
I was close. That was a close call. If I didn't, it was close.
Teresa says, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Greg Kloiber says, Animal House. Okay, there's another good one. Animal House. Joe Fiore says, probably Airplane. I think that's the funniest movie of all time. Christine says, what about Bob? I liked that movie too. It was
good.
It was fun to see, Bob get better and the doctor get worse as it went along.
It was.
Della also says A Fish Called Wanda. Scotch Meltzer says Anchorman. Amy Bowen says Arsenic and Old Lace. I nearly slid off the couch I was on. Blazing Saddles gets an honorable mention too. J.R. Murdoch just says Intentionally. Yeah, what movie did you laugh hardest at? Oh, it might not have been a comedy. Oh. It was just a bad movie he was laughing at. All right. Yeah. Wow.
Voluntarily. Whatever.
Several more Mel Brooks in here. We got Blazing Saddles. We've got Young Frankenstein. Lots of good answers in here. Thank you, everybody who's been responding, and I suspect we'll get more as the next few days go on.
I was surprised that I didn't see Planes, Trains, and Automobiles in there more. Because it was like one thing after another. It was hilarious.
We need like an upvote kind of thing.
Oh, instead here we go. I'm going to be coding something else.
Get Facebook to do that. We want to upvote some of our answers.
Yeah.
All right. With that, we thank you very much. We will ask you another question at the end of the show and throw that on social media next week. So give you time to think about it before I ask you for officially.
There you go.
Thank you. And on to, yes?
Hey, by the way, I do want to mention, along with Douglas Adams and Mel Brooks and Monty Python, Weird Al. So I'm just throwing him in there. I know it's not a movie.
I kind of lumped UHF. Him into the Dr. Demento
UHF.
Genre.
Oh, my God. Nobody mentioned UHF?
Wow. We didn't ask for how many different movies made you laugh, Craig. what movie made you laugh the hardest?
UHF made me laugh pretty good.
Okay. What movie made you laugh the hardest? It's pretty singular in there.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I'll give that. I remember embarrassing my girlfriend at the time because I was laughing so loud.
There were a couple zombie movies that I thought were pretty darn funny too. But
those aren't pillows.
Can we move on?
Sure. Why not? Hey, it's my podcast too.
On this day in history for August 19th, 2020, it's time to put you to the test then if it's part of your podcast. This is the 202nd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 134 days remaining in 2020. It was on this date in 1839 that the French government announced that Louis Daguerre's photographic process is a gift, quote, free to the world. Boy, did he lose out on patents.
Hey. Wait a minute. I think I paid to have some pictures processed in the past.
Yeah. If that's the case, then why is Olin Mills charging an arm and a leg every time?
Right. So also on this date, also today in 1848, the New York Herald breaks the news to the East Coast that the West Coast is the best. No, at the East Coast of the United States of the gold rush in California. Okay. Oh, I see. They break the news to the East Coast that there's a gold rush. On the other side of the country.
It started in January and it took them till August to say, hey, there's a gold rush happening over there.
Yeah, social media was really slow back then.
No kidding. Can't that pony ride any faster?
Yeah, it's exhausting.
Also on August 19th, 1909, the first automobile race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
You sound like a jalopy.
I think I did that last time I was on too.
Also, on August 19th, 1934, the first All-American Soapbox Derby was held in Dayton, Ohio.
When they used real soapboxes.
Yes, right.
Before soap was even invented, if you can imagine that. Also, on August 19th, 1940, the first flight of the B-25 Mitchell Medium Bomber.
And it was also on this date in 1960 in Moscow, Russia, Soviet Union. They downed an American U-2 pilot, Francis Gray Powers. He was sentenced to 10 years imprisonment by the Soviet Union for espionage.
It was Francis Gary Powers.
What'd I say?
Francis Gray Powers.
Well, not really black and white, just kind of
downed that American U2 in the name of love. It was on this date in 1960 that the Soviet Union... it's another Soviet Union one. Just same day they downed the U-2, they launched the satellite Sputnik 2 with dogs Belka and Strelka, 40 mice, 2 rats, and a variety of plants.
And a partridge. It was also 56 years ago today that SINCOM 3, the first geostationary communication satellite, was launched.
Happy birthday goes out on this date to English astronomer and academic John Flamsteed, born on this date in 1646.
And German chemist Julius Lothar Mayer was born 190 years ago today.
Orville Wright, not the one who made the popcorn. That's Orville Redmond.
I was going to ask that.
It's frightening how close our thought patterns are now.
I know. Let's just stop now.
American engineer and pilot. He co-founded the Wright Company. He was born on the same date in 1871.
And Coco Chanel, the French fashion designer, founded the Chanel Company and was born 137 years ago today.
Every time I think of Coco Chanel, I think of... Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. Coco! 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 All right. Another time.
Wow. That was a deep cut.
Kids, cartoons. Get it. Born August 19, 1906, American inventor. He invented the fuser. Also, I believe he had a hand in the television. Philo Farnsworth. Yes. Good news, crybabies. Yeah, that Farnsworth. No.
Yeah.
He's related
Gene Roddenberry, the American screenwriter and producer, was born 99 years ago today.
Born August 19, 1924, Canadian physicist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Willard Boyle.
An English microbiologist and geneticist was born, David Hopwood, was born 87 years ago today.
Dr. Pulaski from Star Trek The Next Generation, actress Diana Muldaur, was born on the same date in 1938.
That's not my doctor. Chinese-American businessman and philanthropist, co-founded Computer Associates International, Charles Wang, was born 76 years ago today.
American lawyer and politician, the 42nd president of the United States, Bill Clinton, was born on this date in 1946.
Okay, he slid into that.
I did also not have relations with that computer.
Okay, moving right along. Also turning 74 today is American general and astronaut Charles Bolden.
And not only this, I think this is kind of weird how, Gene Roddenberry and Jonathan Frakes have the same birthday. Isn't that a little bizarre? That? Well, they do. What's that, Donna? Oh, and Dr. Pulaski, too. Wow, a lot of Star Trek birthdays today. Well, Jonathan Frakes was born today in 1952.
Well, also turning 51 today as an American actor, producer, screenwriter, Matthew Perry.
Listener birthdays for today, August 19th through 25th, include on the 19th, Matt Ryder, who's an Eagle Scout geek. Jedi Kez is on the 20th. 22nd is Zoidberg. Kyle Slingle on the 22nd. Also on the 22nd, Alchemy Dragon. Kira Fiori, yes, Crazy Joe and Christine's daughter is on the 24th. And the 25th is David Grizzly. Happy birthday to all of you. That's the way it was on this day in history for August 19th, 2020.
Oh, look at there. We ended on the note.
I was trying to mash it in. I could hear the music going on to that last section. If you want to get on the birthday calendar, if it's your birthday and you're not on the birthday calendar, you should go over to chuckchat.com/wiki or chuckchat.com/birthday. Both of them work, and you get your name on there and we'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And of course, if it is your birthday and you're not on the calendar, we wish you all the best, that you have a wonderful, wonderful time. Okay, now can we get on with the news? Tell us, Farnsworth. Yes,
news and weather, everyone.
Well, kind of news and weather. you want to start us off?
Related, sort of.
The moon is very important for our weather. It is.
Oh, you want me to start?
Go ahead.
All right. So dozens of times over the last decade, NASA scientists have launched laser beams at reflectors the size of a paperback novel about 240,000 miles. That's 385 kilometers for those of you in Europe and other places other than U.S. away from Earth. They announced today in collaboration with their French colleagues that they received a signal back for the first time, an encouraging result that could enhance laser experiments used to study the physics of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
The reflector NASA scientists aimed for is mounted on the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, LRO, a spacecraft that has been studying the moon from its orbit since 2009. One reason engineers placed the reflector on the LRO was so it could reserve a pristine target to help test the reflecting power of the panels left on the moon surface 50 years ago. These older reflectors are returning a weak signal, which is making it harder for them for science. So scientists have been using reflectors on the moon since the Apollo era to learn more about the nearest neighbor. It's fairly straightforward experiment. Aim a beam of light at the reflector and clock the amount of time it takes for the light to go there and come back.
Mm-hmm.
Decades of making this measurement has led to major discoveries.
The moon is leaving us. It's flying away.
Yeah. Sadly. Yeah. It's time for it to move on. Anyway, so one of the biggest revelations of the moon and the Earth are slowly drifting apart at a rate of about a fingernail grows, or 1.5 inches per year. I thought it was a little bit less than that, but okay. Mm-hmm. The widening gap is a result of the gravitational interactions between the two bodies. And by the way, let me add that they showed this on Mythbusters, I think. One of the last episodes, they showed them shooting the laser at the reflector.
That's pretty cool. I thought there was just one up there, but it says there are 5 reflective panels on the moon. 2 were delivered by mm-hmm. Apollo 11 and 14 crews in 69 and 71. They are each made of 100 mirrors that scientists call corner cubes, as they are corners of a glass cube. And the benefit of these mirrors is that they can reflect light back from any direction it comes from. I've seen one of these, or think of a cylinder, okay, kind of like mm-hmm. this, and you put in a three-sided like triangle, so divide it into thirds, and bevel yep. the corners at about 45 degree angles. So it comes to a point, like it almost looks like a three-sided point.
Like a cone in the inside.
Yes. And then no matter where the angle comes in, those three mirrors will shoot it straight back to wherever it came from. So
that's pretty awesome.
Unlike a parabolic dish, which it'll take anything that hits it and focus it on a center, you know, on a mm-hmm. center point and aim it in one specific direction. Well, you know, it doesn't matter which way the moon is tilted or where you hit this thing. You could come at it from, you know, 15 degrees off center, and it will return it back exactly 15 degrees off center. It was hard to believe until you look at it and you go, wow, wherever I tilt this thing, I can see my eyeball.
You know what's amazing to me is somebody had the foresight to think of sending those to the moon when they're in the throes yep. of putting together the mission to go there. To go, whoa, we need to add this, you know, yeah. and have them drop this off.
I'm sure Clinton they had says, all of the experiments all planned out, Craig.
I know, but it's just like something like this. It's like you go, wow, I don't know. Clinton Alvord says, our buddy Clinton, he says, somebody's been burning CDs. yeah.
Well, at one time I did. And these are like Farnsworth's next glasses. Good news, everyone.
That's right. Hey, by the way, scroll down that. You still got the article up on your browser?
No, I closed it because I was ready to move on, but I can. Okay.
If you look at the device.
Yes.
And then you look over to the upper right just a little bit from it.
Like there's a plastic like a Ziploc bag sitting on yeah.
the. Hey, it must be the wrapper for the device. They just threw it down on the ground.
Or he's done eating his sandwich and litter bug. yeah. I'll set this up after lunch. There we go.
Yeah. They sat down and ate, and then
why? Put it up. Why would you have a Ziploc bag? You wouldn't put your
I
sandwich.
Didn't look at it though.
You wouldn't put your like sandwich one? In there because you're in a spacesuit.
I can't feed it to my
he's
face.
Got peanut butter and jelly all over the face shield.
But doesn't it looks like a Ziploc? Does it not?
Kind of does. It's got a red line on a somewhat gray square.
Yeah.
All right. Next story is also concerning astronauts. Something that devours radiation and survived a nuclear holocaust sounds like it should have its own comic series. Well, maybe it does, but we haven't seen it yet. Fungus is probably not the first thing anyone would think of when it comes to even an unlikely superhero. It's me, Fungi Man.
There's a fungus among us.
And my sidekick, Spore. Well, we do have a Spore drive in Discovery, but we won't talk about that. If anything, fungi would probably get the villain treatment, like the mushroom people of Matango. Okay. Since the that's what the picture is we've got right there. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good stuff. Sounds like MST3K all over the place. Since so many of them are either poisonous or just vomit-inducing. Cladosporium. Oh, boy. Spherospermum is not that fungus.
Are you having trouble tonight?
Easy for you to say. You didn't get the scientific names. It not only replicates and heals itself, but metabolizes potentially lethal radiation. This is why a team of researchers is now studying how this mold, yes, mold, could be used as a shield that protects astronauts from radiation in space. Good, they shortened it on me. Now it's just C. spherospermum. Sounds like a candy now.
Yeah.
It outcompetes other organisms in this non-natural habitat. Foremost is the contamination radius around the plant due to its apparent radio resistance. That was a quote from Nils J.H. Averesh, who co-authored the study on the amazing fungus now on the preprint server Biorixiv, told Sci-Fi Wire. Quote, this is an indication that the organism can utilize certain forms of high energetic ionizing and non-ionizing radiation as a metabolic support function, effectively allowing it to grow faster than normal, which probably have led to the fungus populating the radioactive sites. This is starting to sound like a sci-fi movie now. These mushrooms landed in Fukushima and grew to be giant walking attacking monsters.
Or some mushrooms cleaned up Fukushima.
Well, we could do that too. If that sounds post-apocalyptic, and it does to us, it sort of is. Chernobyl was something of an apocalypse in itself. When the Ukrainian power plant exploded in 1986 because of a defective reactor, it released 400 times more radioactive material into the atmosphere than the atomic bomb that hit Hiroshima. Averesh and his team recently discovered fungi thriving near the dead reactor. It processes radiation through radiosynthesis, much as plants photosynthesize light. When they studied it up close, they found evidence of it using melanin, the same pigment found in human skin, to morph gamma rays and X-rays into the chemical energy it needs to survive. Averesh suspects that CS, I'm not even going to try and pronounce it anymore, shortening it up even more, CS might feed on UV light that needs more investigation. But the how it metabolized gamma and X-rays in an ISS experiment could mean a positive outlook for upcoming missions to the moon and Mars. Both have next to nothing of an atmosphere or magnetic field and get bombarded with radiation. So very cool. Stick some of these fungi on your outside of your spacesuit and away you go.
We're just thinking. Yeah. You know, SpaceX is showing off their new spacesuit and it's got like mushrooms all over.
Dude, do you ever shower? You got fungus growing in your suit.
That's pretty cool. I'm sure they probably release a lot of carbon into the atmosphere as a byproduct. And
maybe
then we probably wouldn't use these anymore.
I don't know that
it contributes to global warming.
Fungus, and I don't know, because it's not photosynthesis. Photosynthesis takes in CO2 and sends out oxygen.
That was a joke. That was a joke.
Okay. Thanks for the clue. We better go on.
We forgot our hand signals, you know. Joke. Yeah. What, I don't know what the hell.
You're choking? What?
Yeah. That's right.
All right. One more science story. Space related.
Yes. So, we're on a space tier tonight. So a gravity suit could protect the astronauts from dangers of weightlessness. The University of California, San Diego, master's student has engineered a negative pressure gravity suit that could slow or prevent the ravages of microgravity on astronauts' bodies suffered during extended space flight.
And we all know this because when you go into the near zero G, your gravity isn't working to tell your bones, hey, it's time, stay strong and the muscular. The body breaks down, and that's why every time you see these people on the space station, they're doing like 12 hours a day of exercise. It's amazing they have
time
to do.
Well, even with the astronauts that came down from the ISS recently, you know, on the SpaceX capsule, they brought them out basically on gurneys, you know, just to make sure they were okay. You know, they sat down when they had their news conference, that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
It's tough stuff. It's tough stuff.
Yeah. Nikki Ashari, an intern at the Altman Clinical and Translational Research Institute, engineered the suit with the help of Dr. Alan Hargens, a professor and director of the Orthopedic Clinical Physiology. Man, it's a lot of words in here. At US San Diego and former chief of space physiology. They get paid by the word here.
Syllable.
At NASA Ames Research Center. Prolonged weightlessness can wreak havoc on spacefarers' bodies outside of Earth's gravity. Bones swiftly lose mass at a rate of 1.5% per month. And muscles atrophy, of course. Even more disconcerting, fluids accumulate near the top of the body and body fluids volume decreases. These changes worsen eyesight and weaken the heart muscle, potentially hampering the flow of oxygen to the brain. So astronauts partially counteract the microgravity's deleterious effects through regular exercise, but exercise can only do so much. Asari's mobile gravity suit could help. It applies negative pressure to the lower body in a BL or in NBLP or LB, never mind, which both shifts blood to the lower body and generates ground reaction forces. I guess this is kind of similar in the, like when, you know, when they do the, they're trying to, the suits that counteract the gravitational forces when you're in a plane, you know,
that squeezes your lower body so that the blood, the pressure forces the, blood and whatnot up to your heart and your brain so you don't pass out.
Yeah. And this one actually does it a little differently. It pushes it up and down towards your legs as well. Mm-hmm. So you don't have the fluid all the way going just to the top of your body. Anyway, you can see a diagram of this and read a little bit more about it. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's nice. He made something like that. Usually, I don't know. I know it's a big problem.
Clearly points out that we have not evolved to live in zero G.
Not yet.
We need gravity. Gravity is your friend. All right, we're going to take a real quick break, and we will be back with a few more stories and my favorite part of the whole show. So stick around.
What, the end?
Hi, this is Dave Slusher from Evil Genius Chronicles, and you are listening to Technorama because you're in the cool club.
Greetings, programs.
And applications.
I'm Ben.
And I am Keith, and we are
the Two Gay Geeks.
We are the nerds behind TG Geeks Webcast,
where we talk about sci-fi,
comics,
film,
horror,
genre.
You name it, we talk about it.
We release an episode every Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern.
You can find us on iTunes, Blueberry, Spreaker, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Also, look us up on YouTube. And of course,
we can be found at tggeeks.com, where you can find not only our webcast,
but articles about other geeky goodness.
So come along for the wildest ride in the potosphere.
Did you just say potosphere?
Yes, yes, he did. Go and check out our friends Ben and Keith over at TG Geeks. They are still podcasting from their studio, as are we, because there's not really anywhere to go. Actually, I think they did recently take a trip. I saw a picture posted from SeaTac Airport. So they're doing some travel, brave souls.
Well, I miss talking to those guys. I wish they'd come back on.
I know. We need to.
Maybe they can hang around outside. We could run a mic cable outside. You can just have them on the show.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll appreciate sitting in the 114 degree weather. That's great.
You get a long enough mic cable, you can just sit in the pool.
That's a 92. It's not exactly comfortable and refreshing. We were out there today. It's like, get in, it's warm. Get out, it's warm. Well, We're not cold.
So it's not one of those days you get out of the pool and go, ooh, you know.
Yeah, no, you don't get out and you don't do that when you get on. You don't do that when you get in. It's just, yeah, it's a hot tub.
Yeah. It's a hot tub.
All right. We have some hacks and strange stories to share with you, which is what that digital bleeping and blooping means. We have an article from Hackaday about a miniature Star Wars arcade that allows you to blow up the Death Star from wherever you go, which sounds like a good idea to me, because who doesn't want to do that? If you have fond childhood memories of afternoons spent at the local arcade, then you had the occasional daydream about tracking down one of those old cabinets and putting it in the living room. until your wife says no.
If I had a dime every time I had that dream.
But the size, cost, and rarity of those machines makes actual owning one impractical for most people. With this fully functional 1/4 scale replica of the classic Star Wars arcade game created by Jamie McShann, it might not be a perfect replacement for the original, but there's no denying it would be easier to fit through your front door. Well, that's a fact. Mm-hmm. Nearly every aspect of the iconic 1983 machine has been carefully recreated, right down to a working coin slot that accepts miniature quarters. Would those be dimes?
Yeah. Yeah.
He sells you the quarters. The fake miniature quarters are a dollar each.
Hey, I can't use this machine. Oh, you got to buy the quarters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I got a miniature dollar bill changer here. Why don't you try that out?
Listen, frankly, go up to the miniature guy in the booth and ask him for some miniature money. Yeah. Frankly, the build would have been impressive enough had he not only put in half the detail work, but we certainly aren't complaining that he went the extra mile. Jamie leaned heavily on the resin 3D printed parts for this build, and for good reason. It's hard to imagine how he could have produced some of the tiny working parts for his cabinet using traditional manufacturing techniques. The game's signature control yoke and coin acceptor mechanism are really incredible feats of miniaturization, and a testament to what's possible at the DIY level with relatively affordable tools. So he went through and built this whole thing. There's a diagram of there's a blow apart that you see on the screen right there of how he put together that controller, because, you know, it's got the two axis swivel. And does it say how much it costs? No. Does it say where you can order them? No.
No, he built it on his own. That's why.
He should be selling it. Okay. Well, it does have a, he added a pair of 3000 milliamp hour LiPo battery packs as a dedicated charger controller so you can blow up the Death Star anywhere you go.
I could tell you, I've seen that. I know you've probably seen it a million times, but I've seen this video game cabinet very recently at my friend's barcade, and this looks exactly like
it does
that machine.
Yep,
it looks fantastic.
Inside this thing is a Raspberry Pi 3 Model A Plus running RetroPie attached directly to the back of a 4.3-inch LCD. Nice, and some integrated amplified speakers that he built. He's using an Arduino to handle the interfacing of the optical coin detector and controls, which makes sense, which communicates with the Pi over USB HID. Wow, that sounds an awful lot like my badge reader that I did for the health club. You can build a lot of stuff with just a little bit of work.
You know what amazes me? Even the T-molding that goes along the edge of the video game cabinet, I mean, whatever he's using, it looks like a miniature. It's even got the right size stickers on the back.
How did it looks do like the stickers?
Model, huh?
I'm sure the stickers were easy to print onto sticker paper.
Well, I mean, I know. I'm just saying he took it. It's in details what I'm getting at.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's really cool.
Unfortunately, anyway,
make fun of me.
No, unfortunately, he's got these big sausage hands and he can't work the miniature controls.
Oh, good Lord, man. You're relentless.
Hey, it's Technorama. We can have some fun with it.
Sure.
All right. Also in the Hacks and Strange Stories, what have we got now?
So new AI dupes humans into believing synthesized sound effects are real.
Really? Like this fire? This is AI fire sound. Could have fooled me.
I'm going to play that at Christmas and see if I can fake anybody out.
The AI horse. That's just a pair of coconuts.
You know what? I can get the same effect by just searching for horse wave on Google.
And rain.
Mm.
And falling asleep.
I think it sounds fake.
You just so got anyway, a couple of coconuts and you're banging them together. Come, Patsy.
Who needs AI? I got coconuts right here. So imagine you're watching a scary movie. The heroine.
Not that kind of heroine, Craig.
AI tricked me into thinking that heroine's heroine. The heroine creeps through a dark basement on high alert. Suspenseful music plays in the background while some unseen sinister creature creeps in the shadows. And then, bang, it knocks over an object. Such scenes would be hardly captivating or scary without the intense but perfectly timed sound effects, like the loud bang that sent our main character wheeling around in fear. Usually these sound effects are recorded by a Foley artist in the studio who produces sounds by using oodles of objects at their disposal. Mm-hmm. Recording the sound of glass breaking may involve actually breaking glass repeatedly. Well, that's the sound you're looking for.
Well, as others are kind of fake, like when you're breaking bones, you're cracking celery, you know, that kind of stuff.
What was that? When I was younger, I watched a Foley artist the first time I was really saw that somebody did this.
Yeah.
They showed the person on the big screen as he was watching it as he was doing.
Yep.
And they were walking through leaves and he's like crunching potato chips.
Yep. Or somebody gets hit. It's like a slab of meat on ping pong paddles and they go.
Hey, you know what? I've probably gone the extra mile on some of the audio stuff we've done in the past. Mm-hmm. I wanted a specific sound of somebody slamming a phone down. I had to make it. And I did that. And I was like, that was fun. It was frustrating because I was like, okay, because I didn't have like stuff at the ready. I just had to go figure out what was going to make that right sound.
Yeah. And sometimes the sound you need isn't the sound that the thing makes. Like, oh
yeah. I mean, I could search for phone bang, you know, phone bang on Google all day long, which I've done that too. It's like, where's the sound I want? That's not what I'm looking for. And just make it yourself. Anyway, so glass breaking and breaking repeatedly, whatever. So in more recent plot twists, researchers have created an automated program that analyzes the movements of video frames and creates its own artificial sound effects to match the scene. In a survey, the majority of the people polled indicated that they believe the fake sounds were real, and the model Autofoley is described in a study published on June 25th in IEEE Transactions on Multimedia.
It still has some flaws in it, though. Listen to the horse closely.
Okay. Burp, burp, burp. Okay, well, you get it. So they got a computer. I wish I'd had a Autofoley a long time ago. That would have saved me a lot of Googling for WAV files.
Oh, pretty soon they're just going to have an auto podcast AI, and then we'll be done.
We'll be retired by then. It'd be like the second Bill and Ted, where they have the evil robots themselves. We'll just kick back and be right. Auto Chuck and an Auto Craig.
Let's take a quick turn to our chat room and see what we've got. We got we mentioned Clinton Alvord and John Miller Jr. Has anybody else stepped in here that we haven't called out? That's all I see.
That's the only one. Hey, that's the only ones that have been vocal.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us. We do the show every Sunday at 9:30 Eastern time.
John Miller Jr. says, don't search for phone bang. Okay.
Oh. Yeah, that'll taint your search results, won't it? Clinton says, I'll take three. So 9:30 Sunday nights on Facebook and YouTube. Boy. We look forward to seeing you there. Don, is there anything in that little window that's showing up right down there where it says Technorama Podcast? Anybody chatting down there? No? Okay. And there's nothing above that? All right, nobody's been chatting on YouTube either, but good for them. Yeah, that's just,
you know what?
That's the text box you can type in up to 200 characters. Okay, and that means...
By the way, this episode is climbing up my list of things that made me laugh the hardest. I don't
All right, and we've had some dandies in our past, too.
Yeah, we've had a few. Oh, we've had some episodes. I remember just laughing my, you know what, off.
When I started laughing so hard that I can't see through the tears, the show's over.
Okay. When I'm having to wipe my face off.
Mm-hmm. Or when you get to be our age, you laugh so hard the tears run down your leg.
Or, you know, just make myself laugh. That's all I...
Let's do... Where's our Patreon song? There it is. Because we have some awesome people. This is my favorite part of the show, not the end, as Craig suggested earlier.
Yeah, all right.
This is where we get to say thank you to all of the people that make this show financially possible. You keep this Technorama thing solvent. Thank you to our patrons, Alexis Duran and Ben Vaughn. I'm going to go the other way on the table now. I've transposed my thought process. Danny Mortensen, thank you very much. Harold McKinstry and Christina and Mike Wills and Steve Therian. Thank you, Amber Elstad, Brian Brown, Dean Jensen, John Clifford, Kyle Nishioka, a.k.a. Mad Marv. Thank you to Night Gig Studios and Spiffy and Amy Bowen, Chris MC, Denise Inglis. Thank you, John Noble and Leon and Saturday Morning Media. Thank you, Steve Cody, Avner Braverman, Dandy Man Coyer, Gary Lindros, Jorga Schrawin, Mark Kilfoyle, Stephen Wetchy, and Steve London. Thank you, everybody who makes this show possible. There are numerous expenses involved, and you keep those manageable, whether it's hosting or software or hardware upgrades. It all happens, and we really, really do appreciate that. And in return, we give you the shout out on the show, but we also have a special episode where Craig and I get together and sort of chat in a not highly produced production environment about topics and share them with you, sort of a conversation with each other that you get as a thank you. That's our payback. And, we're going to have to think of something new, Craig, because we won't have a cruise postcard next year.
You know what? I'll meet you somewhere in Louisiana, and we'll just sign the cards and... drive there.
Or I buy a bunch that say, hey, hello from Phoenix, mail them to you in a box, and then we stamp them and send them.
You know what? We need to come up with a postcard that says it's half and half, South Carolina and Phoenix, you know,
or
together.
We just manufacture some Technorama postcards. Maybe. We're thinking about it. See, we're still a few months ahead of the game on that one. We'll get you a postcard if you're a Patreon person. Thank you. For as little as a dollar a show, and if you look at the screen right there, Donna's put up the link, patreon.com/technoramapodcast. We'd love to hear from you. All right, this is getting a little long, so let me fade that out, turn that off. Oop.
Tell the Emperor to stop playing the guitar.
There we go.
All right.
And, we have a pass the remote, which I think was this one. All right. Pass me the remote, Craig.
Here. I think I got it.
Got it. Thanks. Oh, that's that's my glasses case. It's a magic trick.
Okay, you know what? We've been on the same wavelength all night.
Someone check the phase of the moon or something tonight. There's something weird going on here. If you're not watching the video.
Oh, boy.
That was a good one. We don't have a remote. Wait, I do have a remote for once. I was doing some experimentation with my work video. I was trying to get a monitor in the picture. We'll see what happens to that. Okay.
The remote.
And the visual actually worked. And we still broke the fourth wall and said, ooh, it's a glasses case.
Well, this time I remember to go to the right rather than.
And I had right here. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving right along, our show this week, Donna and I finished up all 6 seasons of Justified. Have you watched Justified, Craig?
I have not, but the wife did, and she loved it.
I loved it, too. Donna loved it. If you liked Ozark, you got to watch Justified. Similar kind of thing. The main character of the story is a United States Deputy Marshal. Deputy United States Marshal, Raylan Givens, starts out in Miami. He's sent back to Kentucky where he grew up. He wasn't real happy about being reassigned there, but his main mission was to stop a criminal called Boyd Crowder, one of his childhood friends and co-workers before he took off and went to the Marshal Service. And you get the feeling that he doesn't quite color inside the lines at all times. The Marshal, not obviously Boyd, who's the criminal, doesn't color inside the lines at all. He doesn't even know what the lines are. But there's this wonderful relationship between the two. And as they go through each season, they bring in a new set of circumstances that kind of convolutes. It's all about who's running the moonshine or who's got the corner in the county or even the state on the marijuana market. It's definitely a TVMA show, so it's not for the kids. But sure. The relationships of the people, lots of gunshots, lots of people getting blown away. So there are some wonderfully colorful characters in this show. I won't tell you who my favorite is, but great stuff. Well written. The star of the show, Timothy Oliphant, is also like one of the executive producers in most of the whole series. So close ties. And again, great writing, great characters. What's that?
I said I like Timothy. I think he does a good job.
In the last season, Sam Elliott is one of the main characters, although he has no mustache. It's really weird to see Sam Elliott without his mustache.
Really?
Yeah. But he's got that characteristic head tilt and the
vocal that goes along with it.
So yeah. It's definitely Sam Elliott, but it took me like two camera shots to go, no, wait, sounds like him. Oh man, he just doesn't have a mustache on. That was a little jarring at first, but Justified. I give this a solid, this is a 9.0 on my scale. You know, it sometimes it's a little violent, which knocked it down a little notch. But good acting, good storyline, good writing, good everything. It's just wonderful all around. So highly recommend it. Invest some time. What is it? 13 episodes per season? I think it was. Yeah, 6 seasons. So you're going to be there a while, but well worth it. Well worth it. That's my pass me the remote, which is a transition into the media corner. That's the remember when. Media corner is the gray one. That's it.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
The squeaky door. The squeaky door on that gets me every time. All right, who did the last story? I've been talking.
I'll take this one because you did your old Justified thing.
All right, go ahead.
So Doctor Who star David Tennant wants to cross over to Star Trek.
I'd love to see this.
I know, right? If David Tennant had his way, Star Trek would get a little more wibbly wobbly and timely and all that good stuff. So the time for the Trek Lord or the Time Lord to hit Trek, or the Trek Lord to hit time. Yeah, however you want to read it. So BAFTA winning Scottish actor David Tennant has more recently been starring in Amazon's Good Omens.
Love that too.
But he's probably been, huh?
Loved that too. Didn't we talk? I think we talked about that on this show. That was one of the first ones we did in Pass the Remote.
Oh, I think it was. Yeah, I enjoyed that as well. But he's probably best known for his role as a 10th Doctor. He's actually my Doctor. That's the one I like. In BBC's venerable time travel series, Doctor Who. While promoting the second season of his podcast, David Tennant does a podcast with
clever title.
Yeah, it is a good title. With a Reddit AMA, he was asked, "What other big franchise would you be interested in joining?" And he quickly replied, "Star Trek would be great." After talking to George Takei for the podcast, I've got a bit immersed in it. So Star Trek's Takei was one of the guests on the new season of Tennant's podcast, which debuted this week. Tennant does have a connection to a Star Trek franchise. He co-starred in Star Trek The Next Generation, Sir Patrick Stewart's 2008 for the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of Hamlet. which was adapted into a feature film in 2009. At the time, there was even a rumor that Stewart would be crossing over to play a Time Lord with Tennant and Doctor Who.
That would have been great. I would love to see Patrick Stewart in Doctor Who.
Right there.
I could just see these two on stage. It just doesn't seem like a likely combination, because you'd have Patrick Stewart going, "Wouldst thou beest thine own?" And then Tennant goes, "Nah."
Yeah. Right. So a number of actors have appeared in both franchises, including Simon Pegg, Nana Visitor, John DeLancey, and Star Trek Discovery Season 3's David Ajala. How do you say his last name?
Ajala? I don't know.
Okay, if Tennant were to get his wish, he'd be the first Doctor from Doctor Who to cross over Star Trek. Now, you know, I was looking to see if it mentioned this, but it's not unprecedented, because Star Trek in the comics have crossed over with other franchises, and it has crossed over with Doctor Who in the comics. So there was like a 3-issue thing from, it was IG. I'm trying to remember what it was, which one. Anyway, there was a crossover with Doctor Who.
What would happen if the Borg assimilated the Cybermen? Would that be redundant?
It'd be a little redundant. Yeah. A feedback loop. That's what would happen.
Or is it the other way around, where the Cybermen assimilate the Borg?
Divide by zero. Yeah.
Yeah. Divide by zero and they all blow up.
Yeah. Yay. We solved all the problems.
We didn't need that diagram that we were going to upload to Hugh's memory. The 4747.
Right.
All right. That sounds fun. I'd like to see him. Would you cast him? Maybe this is a discussion for the topic is Trek, but how would you see him playing a character? He's typically played, aside from Doctor Who, he's played villains like Barty Crouch Jr. on the Harry Potter thing. He's played, Lucifer's henchman on Good Omens. So he plays those characters very well.
You know what? I could see him doing a villain in Star Trek for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Q? I would like to see him. He could be a Q character. Oh, nice call, Donna.
This is why we keep your wife around.
You think about it. That's not a far cry from Doctor Who either. You know,
no.
He could go anywhere in space and time. Although he's not omnipotent and says, you know, snap his fingers or wave his hand and something comes into existence. But,
well, yeah, I don't know. I would love to see him as Doctor Who. I think that'd be cool, but I don't see that happening, but I could see him being a villain or something.
Although he's got the chops to play, you know, a main character too. He could be one of the officers on the Pike series.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sorry. You know what? I was thinking movies. You're right. We have a lot of opportunities now for people to join Star Trek other than just feature films. So
he's the new communications officer, and he's just over there banging on the console. What's wrong with this thing? Can you hear me?
Right. Oh, boy.
All right. That takes care of it for this show, pretty much. We've got our question of the week. What new hobbies have you picked up this year, and would you recommend them to others? So, you know, we've all been given some extra time at home with the families and whatnot, and picked up a couple of things that I probably wouldn't have done otherwise. So what have you picked up, and what do you recommend? Would you recommend them to others? So we'll have that out on social media next week, and get a hold of us on the listener line if you want to get a hold of us sooner. 707-530-CHAT. We did get one voicemail, but it sounded like somebody pocket dialed us, or their kids stole the phone and there was some sort of crackly. Did you hear that, Craig? The message that
came
through?
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, there was a voicemail message that came by. I was like,
I wouldn't doubt it. It wouldn't be the first time.
And at the end, you hear this little voice from a child saying, "You're much taller."
Okay. It was probably John Miller Jr.
or Crazy Joe's daughter stole the phone and did something. So check your phones, guys. I didn't recognize the phone number, but I could call you back and say, "Hey, thanks for calling the listener line."
So thanks for your voicemail.
You can send an email to technorama@chuckchat.com as well. Our Patreon topic this week, we're gonna kind of glide in and out of a couple of different topics. How do we deal with change? And we've also got some gadget ideas. I ordered something this week, and then Craig sent me a message that said, hey, what do you think of this? So we're going to discuss that a little bit on the Patreon show in just a few moments, but you'll get that before you get this. So again, Doctor Who's been messing with the time-space continuum. And with that, we are going to glide on out of here. See what I did there? I'm not even sure what I did there. Okay.
I got it.
It's top of the hour. Or we've been here for an hour. We appreciate you listening, even at double speed. God bless if you can understand what I'm saying very fast on double speed. You have an amazing brain to be able to digest that. Yeah. You can find us over at chuckchat.com/technorama. That's our page. That's where we've been for the last 15 years or so. And it's probably not going to change anytime soon. Get a hold of us on the listener line, 707-530-2428, or send us an email. We are interested in what you have to say, or what we've said, what you have to say about what we said. Okay, that didn't make any... Did that? I think that came out all right.
Yeah, whatever.
Tell a friend about Technorama, and we greatly appreciate it. Until next week, Craig, would you give them the traditional salutary binary high five?
Yes. 101.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Thank you. See you next time.